Avoiding your unfinished home projects because you're not sure where to start? Thumbtack knows homes, so you don't have to. Don't know the difference between matte paint finish and satin? Or what that clunking sound from your dryer is? With Thumbtack, you don't have to be a home pro. You just have to hire one. You can hire top-rated pros, see price estimates, and read reviews, all on the app. Download today.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Looking for a job is lonely. Endless searching, phone calls that go nowhere, applications that vanish into thin air. What if you could link with dozens of local companies who are hiring right now with just one connection? That's Express Employment Professionals. Find us at expresspros.com. One connection, endless opportunities, and no fees ever for job seekers. Express Employment Professionals. Expresspros.com.
New York. It's looking like it's supposed to look out there in Detroit. The Knicks are handling business in Motown. 888-808-1019. Keith McPherson on the fan. We are watching and riding along with the game. We're about to start talking about the Mets in a little bit. And I mean, so far, so good. The Knicks' largest lead of the night, 14 points here. They're up 37-23. And they got that snarl on their face. They got that look on their face like, yeah, what's good? They got to close them out. They got to close them out. You can't win the game in the first quarter, but they came out of the gate with the energy that they don't plan on going back home to play another game against this team. So, tonight's the night. 888-808-1019 if you want to chime in. I do want to hear from some Mets fans. Who you mad at now? Juan Soto? Or, like, how do you feel, right? You got to see two Juan Soto homers in a loss. The baseball is baseballing. Two meaningless home runs from Juan Soto, but at least he's unlocked. Maybe he was just waiting for May. Maybe he's going to carry you through this whole month. Or are you mad at, I don't know, Brandon Nimmo or Jesse Winker? Or I don't know. We'll talk about it. The bullpen, Carlos Mendoza's decisions with the bullpen. Are you just mad that, like, viruses and things go around? Allergies, neurovirus, stomach virus. I don't know. The guys get sick. These players are not immune to that stuff, they're human too. But yeah, Brandon Nimmo 0 for 4 today. Lindor 0 for 4 today. Vientos 0 for 4 today. Tyrone Taylor 0 for 4 today. Not good enough. Not good enough if you ask me. Three hits outside of Juan Soto's two hits that were home runs. Not good enough for the Make It Happen Mets in a rubber game on their soil trying to beat the Diamondbacks. Who, shout out to the Diamondbacks at 17-14. Let's take a look at the standings. Doo-doo-doo. At 17-14, the Arizona Diamondbacks are fourth place in their division. They play in the best division in baseball, the NL West. They might put three wild cards in the dance if they keep it up. I respect the Arizona Diamondbacks because I watched them come to New York the first time and beat the Yankees with Zach Gallen, with Corbin Burnes. Not Merrill Kelly. But anyway, Corbin Burnes did what he had to do. Zach Gallen did what he had to do. And the same thing happened with the Mets. You lost with those two guys on the mound with the Arizona Diamondbacks. They have a good manager. They have enough good hitters. And they're scrappy. They come back late in games. They fight. They claw, scratch. They never say die. And at 17-14, they are in fourth place. 17-14 would have them in second place in the NL Central. 17-14 would have them right next to the Phillies for second place in the East. They'd be right under them in third. 17-14 would have them in second place in the AL West. 17-14 would have them in second place in the AL Central. So, or third place in the AL Central. And they would be in second place in the AL East. What I'm saying is, they're a good team. Don't be so mad or disappointed that you lost the series. I know it's nice to win every single game at home. They won 8 in a row. They lost one, lost two. And I think it's good to get that out of the way, especially because now you go on the road. Let's see what they do on the road against the Cardinals. You already swept the Cardinals. You can sweep them in their building. But then you got to face the Diamondbacks again in their place. So it's about to get a little interesting for the amazing Mets, who have come out the gate as the quote-unquote best team in baseball and having all facets of the game be amazing. They've been able to hit enough. Even with Juan Soto not hitting, Pete Alonso's had an MVP start. Lindor has not had a cold April. April's done. Guys like Tyrone Taylor have come through. Mark Vientos figured it out. And you've even got contributions out of guys like Luis Angel Acuna and Jesse Winker and Starlin Marte. And Nimmo had a 9 RBI game the other day. But it's about to get interesting. Now they're about to really be tested because this stretch of going on the road facing the Cardinals, but really going on the road facing the Diamondbacks, it's next week. Cinco de Mayo week, 3 at Chase Field against the Arizona Diamondbacks, and then you travel home and you face the Cubs, and if you're not paying attention, the Cubs are really good. I just happened to be watching MLB Big Inning today, and they're facing Paul Skeens, and I read online that Paul Skeens over 6.5 strikeouts was the most bet baseball prop of the day, as if Paul Skeens was going to dominate the Cubs. In the 5th inning, I saw Dansby Swanson homer, I saw Kyle Tucker homer, and Seiya Suzuki homer. And then Seiya Suzuki homered again later in the game once they got Paul Skeens out of there. The Cubs are really good. I saw a graph that had the teams in baseball that have played the most teams under 500 and their success rate. The Cubs have the best record, and they've played all good competition. Teams, better than 500 for the most part. And then on the other side, it was the Mets, who, like, the Mets have benefited from playing a lot of the, lesser teams so far. So 888-808-1019, as we start to open the conversation on the Mets, I will play some clips from Carlos Mendoza. We will hear from Juan Soto. We'll talk about Kodai Senga battling through sickness to be on the mound. And, yeah, we'll get into the conversation around the bullpen and just what you expect to see here as we get into May now. Now we hit Cinco de Mayo, where somebody said to me, hey, Keith, when should we start worrying about Juan Soto? I said, if he still hasn't hit the home runs and looked the part, driving in runs by Cinco de Mayo, today helps. Today certainly helps. And we all know as baseball fans, Memorial Day weekend is where you really start to put that first checkpoint down of the season to say, okay, here we are. And okay, here we are, another 3. Bang! The Knicks are up 40-26 with about 10.5 minutes left in the second quarter, controlling what they can control. They got to look about them like, okay, we are going to finish our food here. We came all the way back to Detroit. We didn't play how we were supposed to play in our building. We like playing in your building. We like being the road team, the visitors, the enemy. We like this kind of party. So far, so good. If you're watching the Knicks game, call me up. Tell me what you think. And if you're a Mets fan and want to chime in on what you've seen out of Citi Field and the Mets today in this series, we can do that as well. Gary in Waterbury, my guy, you're back on the Fan.
Yo, shouts to Nasir Jones, New York State of Mind on the rejoin. Shouts to Connor for taking the call. And McFair the Cavalier, you won't be around next year. My rap's too severe, kicking mad flavor in your ear.
Bump, bump, bump,
right. Bump. Bump. Yo, even if the Knicks win the series, what percent chance do you actually give them to beat the Celtics?
0.
Exactly. 0. They ain't winning that. I'm not a Knicks fan.
Percent chance do I have them to not get swept? I think I'll give them if the Magic could get a game off of them, I'll give them a 50% chance to get a game.
They ain't winning that series. No chance. And foo Philly, foo Soto still, foo them guys. And are you willing to keep Weaver the closer for as long as we could ride it out? I'm willing to let him ride it out for a long time.
Hey, yo, Gary, time out, pause. First off, we haven't gotten there to the Devin Williams conversation, the Luke Weaver conversation. I'll say this. It was broke. They fixed it. I don't need to fix it again. You know what I'm saying? Why can't Devin Williams be the setup guy? I had a quote that WFAN put out on our social media, like a quote card or something about, maybe it was a Ryan article special. But what I was saying is, going into this homestand and like now it's warm, right? Now we've got back-to-back series at home, Yankee Stadium, especially because, you know, Mets fans were talking about how great their attendance was and how they win all these games. Like, these games are about to be packed at Yankee Stadium. I'll see you there tomorrow for Jazz Chisholm jersey night. I already know. I'm like, I gotta call in some favors or something. I'm not trying to sit in a line, bro. I've done it before. I'm not trying to sit in a line, bro. I'm not trying to be in line at 4:30 in the afternoon. Sitting in a line for an hour to get the jersey, and then you go in the stadium. I'm not rich like some of y'all. I can't exist in the stadium for that long because I'm not buying all that stuff in there. I'm not buying food. I'm not buying drinks. I'm not doing it. So tomorrow we'll be there. But as far as Devin Williams is concerned, please do not boo this man in the setup role. Please do not heckle this guy. I was so disappointed last Friday because last Friday it was warm. Last Friday we had the vibes for the hockey jersey night. And I saw all of my old pals and friends at 161st and River. And it was feeling like the first real Friday night in the Boogie Down Bronx. We were up 2-1. I wanted to win that game. And fans start chanting, "We want Weaver," after the first two batters. And I end up leaving. As soon as I saw Jimenez and Springer on their giddy up going home, I'm like, I'm going home. We're not winning this game. And no, you can't blame the fans for it. I'm not blaming the fans, but I'm begging y'all, do not go there and make it harder for Devin Williams, who is like this soft-spoken dude that is clearly in over his head as a New York Yankee. We eat our own, and it is not cool, man. It is not cool to like go there and be like, you know, I chanted "We want Weaver," and they put Weaver back as a closer. Like, bro, we get it. Like, at least we have Weaver. Leave it to Weaver. And so now, you're asking me, do I want Devin Williams back as the closer? I think he will go back to being the closer because that's what the Yankees acquired him for. But I don't need him back in that role, no. I need Jonathan Loaisiga to return this month. He is. Fernando Cruz throwing that splitter. All-time great New Jersey Jackal. I need to have a back of our bullpen with Fernando Cruz, Jonathan Loaisiga, Devin Williams, and Luke Weaver. Close the door. Good night. Good night. Especially with this shaky rotation. Good. Like if this bullpen can be strong, then I don't need Will Warren or Carlos Carrasco to go but 3-4 innings. But we'll get to the Yankee conversation in a minute. JB Bickerstaff is at half court yelling at somebody or something. And since I got into the baseball, I'm not locked in on the basketball. But they're taking a timeout. Oh, it was a technical foul on JB Bickerstaff. He's doing the most, bro. I'm getting tired of looking at his face. He's been crying the whole series, walking out to half court. What is this about? Oh, he's getting at, oh, okay. He's getting at the ref, but like, about what? I missed that. Somebody will tell me either on the live chat or on Twitter. 888-808-1019. But I did plant some seeds about the Mets losing the series to the Arizona Diamondbacks. The home win streak ending at 8, and then back-to-back losses. But fret not, that's just the baseball being baseball. And, of course, you lose the series, and you also lose the best record in baseball, and you get Juan Soto back with a two-homer game, the first in a Met uniform. And reminder, he'll be here for 15 years. Okay, so now Mets are on the table, Yankees are on the table, and of course, we're talking Knicks. Coming up, we have our first guest of the night, so that's good. John Harper will join us to talk a little bit more about the Yankees and the Mets. So if you're on hold, stay on hold. We'll get to the baseball. Obviously, we're keeping our eye on the basketball. This is Keith McPherson on the Fan. KM to AM returns right after this. We are vibing. We are now going to shift gears a little bit, but Mets fans that are on hold, stay on hold. We're watching the Knicks game, and we started talking a little bit of Yankees. Joining us right now is John Harper. You see him on SNY, and you've heard him on The Fan a few times. John is going to talk Mets and Yankees with us. Welcome in, John.
Hey, Keith, how are you?
I'm good. Thanks for taking time out of your night to chat with us real quick. You know, we're obviously all locked in on the Knicks game, but this is New York. We have Mets fans and Yankee fans that are in season, and some of us take it more serious than the playoffs, so here we are.
It's a great baseball town still, but I'm locked in on these Knicks too. I mean, I'm a Nets guy, but because of my Jersey roots, but I'm interested in this Knicks team. They look pretty good so far.
Yeah, I'm a Nets guy as well. Growing up in Jersey, and you know, it was just the Nets and the Devils. Now it's only the Devils, but I mean, it's New York, and when the Knicks are good, it's different because there's so many fans that root for the Knicks. I'm rooting for them to beat Detroit tonight. I don't want to see them lose to the Pistons.
Yeah.
But yeah, we'll get back to that as there's 5 minutes.
You're old enough to remember the Jason Kidd era.
Of course, that's the era that made me a fan of the Nets. Really,
he was so good, man. He should have been the MVP 1 year.
Yeah, and then, I mean, we get Vince Carter, and you think that after they go to back-to-back finals, Vince Carter's going to put them over the top, and then that didn't go that way. But anyway.
Best dunk ever, though, over Alonzo Mourning. Right?
Yeah, you can play that one back on YouTube. That's the one you show all the kids about how great, you know, VC was, Vinsanity. But, you know, talking about, you know, adding a guy and putting you over the top, Juan Soto is a Met. And Juan Soto was a guy that last night I was taking calls and fans were telling me he's uncomfortable, he's pressing, he looks like he doesn't want to be here. What's up with this guy? He doesn't look the same. He's getting pitches to hit. He's not drilling the pitches. But then in a game like today, and what I was saying last night was get him in more situations, get him in more, like, it's early, right? Get him to the postseason. Get him in more situations like in the ninth inning last night, and he'll show you who he is. He doesn't fold when other players will fold. Today, you got to see vintage Juan Soto, a two-homer game, which I've also been advertising. I'm a Yankee fan, so I've seen him have two-homer games that can win you the game. I've seen him hit the you know, winning home run, and I'm like, he's going to have a moment, and it came, but it just didn't happen in a win. What do you think about now the Mets, right? Today, they kind of let Juan Soto down. Juan Soto comes through, but the rest of the guys don't come through, and they end up losing the series. He performed in the rubber match.
Yeah. I mean, you can't lose a game. He hits two home runs. It just doesn't seem right. But I think the Mets they would trade the win for him getting going for the two home runs. And that's Soto right there. You know, as you said, you've watched him. When he's sitting back and taking the ball the other way, and he's not – yeah. The only thing that stood out to me about – the body language has been a little weird. Where's the Soto shuffle and all that? But the thing that stood out statistically is he hit the highest ground ball rate of his career by far. And talking to scouts about it, they see the same thing. And their eyes tell him he's just a little anxious, maybe because of the contract. Rolling over on balls, out in front of a little ball on balls, hitting them on the ground that he would normally stay back on and, you know, backspin into the air and all that. But today's a great sign for the Mets the way he. You know, he made it look so easy when he's in that groove. So I think maybe this gets him going because when he's right, he's not Judge, but nobody's Judge.
I was about to say no one is Judge, and they're trying to put Judge side by side with Bonds. And every time I see those numbers, I'm like, Bonds was on steroids. Let's not even do that.
Hey man, I got so mad this morning. I'm a big Mark DeRosa fan on MLB Network, and he does great breakdowns and stuff. You know. But he went into a big thing about how Judge is the best he's seen since Bonds. Come on, man, you can't compare Judge to Bonds.
2001 Bonds. I saw a little bit of that on the internet.
Yeah, I mean, Bonds was so roided up. I mean, I was there. I saw him without a shirt on in the clubhouse. It was a joke. And I know, you know, I've told the story over the years. You know, people there that the Giants trainers were telling their beat guys his head size grew about two sizes bigger, three sizes bigger. I mean, it was unbelievable.
He had to get him a size 8 hat. He went from a 7 to an 8.
Yeah. I mean, come on. Judge, man. I was on our baseball show tonight on SNY, and we were talking about Judge, and I said, it's become part of my morning routine. It's like brushing my teeth. I go to his baseball reference page every morning and just stare at the black type. It's unbelievable. The bold type about how many categories he's leading in. It's unbelievable what he's doing.
Yeah, here's a stat that came across my timeline today from OptiStats. Prior to 2005, no American League player had ever collected 50 hits in a season before May. Neither had an AL player reached base 70 times before May, nor amassed 85 total bases before May. Aaron Judge did all three this year.
Oh, man. I know. I also joked on the show. I said, what is this, 1941? I mean, that was the late year Ted Williams hit 406. And Ted Williams wasn't facing guys coming out of the bullpen in the 6th, 7th, 8th inning, 9th inning, throwing 99 miles an hour. So, I mean, you can legitimately make a case that Judge could be the best hitter of all time.
I did make that case last year. And then ultimately we get to the postseason and he's not the same hitter. So yeah. I've watched so many of his at-bats live. I was at his first game. I go to about 40, 50 games a year since he's come up. I've seen him do this, and I'm like, I've never watched a better player. I was a kid when you know, we saw Bonds or Tony Gwynn or Ken Griffey or whoever you want to throw in, even A-Rod. I'm like, this guy is a different level, and hitting for average. He'll slap singles through, and then when you give him a pitch to hit, like, he's hitting it out, and he's hitting it out 400-plus feet, and it's every single day. It's every day.
Yeah, I know. And he keeps getting better. I mean, that's the one thing that I was looking at some of the, you know, the stats on Baseball Savant and all that. The thing that really stands out is how much he's improved his chase rate. You know, he doesn't chase anymore. He's got one of the best chase rates in the top 5% in MLB. He used to be down, 50%. So he just keeps getting better and better. And when he, you know, now he's to the point, if he's not going to chase, he hits everything, just about everything hard. So, I mean, I don't know if he can hit 400, but he can hit 350, I think. Why not?
Yeah, he's going to have an over 350 average at the end of the year. He's probably going to win the Triple Crown if he stays healthy and keeps his up. Let me lay this on you. This is something I've been putting out there, because you speak on his chase rate. I get so frustrated watching him take, you know, pitches at his ankles, and the umps call him his strikes. And I'm like, that ball is down. This guy is 6'7". That's out of his strike zone.
They've gotten a little better about it over the years, because Boone hit, you know, was on him all the time about it. But they still, you do see it at least a couple times a night where balls below his knees, they call strikes.
And he doesn't get mad. He doesn't say a word about it. He steps out of the box, adjusts his gloves, whatever, steps right back in. But we're about a season or two away from the automatic balls and strike system. He just turned 33. There are a lot of naysayers and people online with anonymous accounts that tell me Judge is aging out. Judge isn't going to be the same Judge in a couple years. And I'm like, no. Here's my theory, John. If he's 33 and he's still getting better, right? He's off to the best start of his career. He just turned 33 over the weekend.
Yeah.
If they can get this automatic balls and strike system in by the time he hits 36, like, that's going to extend his prowess. That's going to extend his dominance. And him being not as great as he is still all-star level, better than most of the players in the league.
Yeah, listen, why not? I mean, come on. Times have changed. Look what LeBron's doing. Nobody ever thought a guy could play like LeBron in the NBA at his age, but you know, what they're doing now with conditioning and everything, I think he'll, even if he, you know, you got the DH to go to, I think he'll be able to hit, you know, well deep into his 30s, maybe into his 40s, who knows? So I think it is possible.
Prices keep going up these days. It feels like being on an elevator that only goes up.
Going up.
But not at Metro. We're pushing the down button.
Going down.
We've lowered prices. Get one line of 5G data for $40, period. That's 20% lower. And you get a free 5G phone when you bring your number. Only at Metro.
5-year guarantee on eligible plans. Exclusions apply. See website for details. Not available at Metro with T-Mobile in the past 6 months. Tax applies.
Today's episode is sponsored by NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast. Making financial decisions shouldn't feel like picking a TV show. Too many options, too much hype, and no way to know what's actually good. NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast cuts through the clutter. Their finance journalists break through real-world money decisions with clear, research-backed insights. From investing to home buying to credit cards, the nerds help you navigate major financial decisions with confidence. Leave TV to fate. Leave your next financial move to the nerds. Follow NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast wherever you listen.
I'd much rather see them go to the challenge system than that automatic balls and strikes, because I saw it in spring training. I don't know if you watched it all. I kind of like it. It's like the tennis thing. You can challenge it, and within 5-10 seconds, you got an answer and you move on. And you give each team, you know, you give them a few challenges, not unlimited. But and then you save them for important spots. So I'd rather see that if it happens.
Yeah. I saw it in spring training. I saw it like in a game in Seattle for the All-Star game 2 years ago. And it was great. It added a sense of suspense and it added a little flair to the game, being able to, you know, for, you know, the challenge to happen. I think it's the same thing, right? You know, it's you know, if Judge gets a low strike called at his shoes, he can tap his helmet to get that looked at. They go look at it and, you know, they come back and say, you know, that was a ball. And then the, you know, crowd cheers. We're getting there. The future is now. And, you know, with Judge, What he's doing at $40 million a year is a steal. Back to the Mets. Obviously, yeah. With the price tag on Juan Soto, the return on investment hasn't necessarily been there, but who cares? They have been the best team in baseball. What I have been saying the last couple of nights is the pop that they've already gotten from Juan Soto, you see it with ticket sales. Their attendance is up. The pop that they've got with Juan Soto is the fact that, like, I think the rest of the team, high tide raises all ships. The rest of these guys have carried him and kind of raised their play. And you can't not acknowledge Pete Alonso's MVP-like start and Lindor not having a slow April. Those are the guys that bat behind him and in front of him. They are benefiting from Juan Soto being in that lineup.
I agree. I think his presence is a big factor, whether he's hitting or not. And I think there's some, there's got to be some effect too, and just in terms of he takes on so much of the spotlight, the pressure, that I think Alonso, even though everything that went on with him with the free agency, I still think he allowed him to go a little bit under the radar and maybe take a little pressure off. And I give him credit for he fixed some things. He's not chasing as much either the way he did last year. But I do think there's a definite Soto effect. We saw it last year with the Yankees, and I think you're seeing a little bit, even though you haven't seen prime Soto yet.
So just kind of going back and forth with the Yankees, we're talking to John Harper from SNY right now. Let's talk pitching. The Mets pitching lab is diabolical. Hefner's laboratory. I don't know what they do in there. I don't know what they teach in there. I don't know how they fix these guys in there. And even what we're seeing out of random guys coming out of the bullpen that I've never heard of in baseball, they've been effective. So they've got this down to a literal science. David Stearns is able to build a bullpen. He's able to not spend on top-end guys like a Max Fried or a Corbin Burns in the offseason and still maximize their rotation and get a lot out of that. Now we're starting to see, though, some injuries come into play. Danny Young is hurt. AJ Minter is hurt. And we're also starting to see guys struggle like Ryan Stanek or Edwin Diaz or Reed Garrett or whoever. How long do you expect the Mets to keep it up? They had the lowest ERA. They're getting a lot out of guys like David Peterson, Tyler McGill. How long do you expect their pitching to continue to be so solid? Or do you think that they're about to just go through the ebbs and flows of baseball soon as well?
Yeah, well, first let me give a little quick plug. I did a big story on their whole pitching process and how much they've changed in terms of the analytics and everything that goes into their pitching lab. It's going to be running on SNY.tv starting, I think, tomorrow morning. So I give you some answers right there. But I can't imagine they were going to be able to continue at this level. But they do have a process where they have gotten. They do get the most out of guys, and a lot of it has to do with what they do in that lab in terms of identifying pitch selection, pitch pairing, pitch design, all that stuff. It's not a I don't think you can call it a coincidence based on everything they've done to make this process work. But still, you got guys like Griffin Canning. I'm starting to believe a little bit more in McGill. I like the idea of Holmes as a starter. I think he's big enough and strong enough to be durable. But I think there's got to be, some regression here. One issue for them is they're not going deep into games. And part of that, I think, is the team not, that's the nature of the game these days. And the team doesn't let these guys go around three times in the order sometimes, unless it's your premier starter. So that's starting to catch up with them in terms of all the overuse of the bullpen. As you said, they have injuries now in the pen. They have some issues. I'm really curious about the Diaz thing too. They've only used him once since he had that little, they called it a hip cramp. And there's been opportunities to use him when they could have won a couple more games. One in Washington and one of these Arizona games. And Mendoza's, he said it's not about the hip or anything like that. But I'm curious about whether he's right. He's had some issues anyway, as we know. But They got some things to straighten out in the bullpen for sure, and they got to get Manaea back in that rotation. He's really their horse. They catered this rotation, six man rotation, to Senga. You got to get more out of Senga than what he gave him today. I know he had they've got this flu going around or whatever, but I think they're in a good spot pitching wise, but I think they're going to need more as you get deeper into the season.
Okay, and last thing for you, the Yankees pitching. I mean, the Yankees lose Gerrit Cole, the Cy Young winner from 2 years ago. They lose Luis Gil, the rookie of the year from last year. Marcus Stroman was supposed to be traded, but they start the season with him making starts. Then he goes on the IL. So, you know, they're relying on Carlos Carrasco, former Met, who's 38 years old. He's not what he once was. And on the other end, they're relying on a young guy in Will Warren, who's a whole rookie, who has made, I don't know, 11, 12 starts in his career. Like, what do you see the Yankees doing? You think that they'll make a move to go add to this rotation with a starter, with an ace? Because Max Fried has been excellent. He's been worth all the money they paid him. And then Clark Schmidt is a question mark because he came back kind of slow from being hurt in spring training. And Carlos Rodon has been good his last three outings. But, like, with Aaron Judge being Aaron Judge, this pitching's got to be more solid, and I think they got to make a move.
Yeah, I mean, I can hear it in your voice. You don't trust Rodon, no matter how many times.
No, I don't. It's good that he turned a corner, but he's a guy, yeah. I make jokes about him. Like, if the wind blows the wrong way, if his shoelace comes untied, if a ball is called, or if a strike is called a ball, he's done. He's unraveling.
Well, he pitches with so much emotion. Sometimes you see it. He gets carried away, and I think he's a classic case. He reminds me a little bit of A.J. Burnett. Sometimes, as good as he can be, the game speeds up on him in certain innings, and then he just doesn't. He can't find a way to slow it down again. But I mean, he'll help you over the course of the season. But I think you're right; they're probably going to need pitching. I think a lot depends if they're going to get Heel back or not. And Schmidt's the guy that, you know, you've been talking about for years. Is taking a next step and becoming a true staple in the rotation. He always seems to have injury problems or something here and there. So I think they probably will. I mean, I predicted, did a column at the beginning of the year predicting they'd get Alcantara, but Alcantara actually hasn't pitched that well coming back from Tommy John. So I don't know. I mean, pitching's been okay, but right now you wouldn't call it a rotation built to win a championship based on, you know, losing Cole and all that. So, you know, Cashman will be out there looking for pitching at the deadline probably.
John, you're the man. Again, plug the article because I'm definitely going to check it out. Like I said, I don't know what goes on in Hefner's laboratory. Thanks for joining us tonight. Go ahead and plug that article again, and we appreciate you coming on.
Yeah, thanks. On SNY.TV, the SNY website, and it'll be up tomorrow. So appreciate it, Keith. Good talking to you.
The great John Harper on The Fan, 888-808-1019. A little bit of bad news coming out of Motown in Detroit. The whole time I was on the phone, the Pistons woke up. They made a hell of a run, and that arena woke up. I just saw Jameson Williams from the Detroit Lions after Malik Beasley hit the three for the Pistons to go up 61-59 at half. Jalen Duren was getting in Jalen Brunson's face a little bit. It's starting to get chippy. The momentum that the Knicks had evaporated. And if you know like I know, and I know you know like I know, whatever they say or do at halftime is not effective. Maybe this will be the half that the coach actually has a plan. Maybe a rah-rah speech. Maybe they do what Mikal Bridges said about different layup lines. I don't know. Maybe they go out there and try and have a dunk contest, something to get fired up because they need it now. The Pistons are alive now. They're fighting for their lives. They're not trying to get eliminated tonight in front of their home crowd. And now they believe. 888-808-1019. Everything is on the table. Obviously, your reaction to the first half of the Knicks game, which, just looking at this run, I got to go to the box score and see exactly what happened. I was on the phone watching, and I'm like, the Knicks are giving it up, and the Pistons are getting hot. So we can continue to talk about the first half of the Knicks. Obviously, I was just talking to John Harper about some things with the Yankees and with the Mets. We'll get into more of the baseball conversation as well. Keith McPherson on The Fan. Call us up. We'll be right back. Oh, boy. Yeah, I went back and looked at the box score and the run that the Pistons went on, and that's what you needed not to happen. They basically flip-flopped, right? The Knicks won the first quarter 37-23, and then they lose the second quarter 38-22. What are you doing? What are you doing? Limo driver Ed, tell me what you saw. What are they doing? What are they thinking about?
I don't know what to tell you, bro. I'm watching them, and it's just that, I don't know. Teams just don't hold leads anymore like they used to years ago. I mean, all of a sudden, they're up by 15. Next thing you know, they're down by one or two.
Malik Beasley, I'm looking at the box score. Malik Beasley got super hot. Six threes. He hit six threes. Of course, because I bet him to have six threes in game five, and he didn't. He did it in the first half tonight. That's how it goes.
But I tell you one thing, that's what I'm saying. This year's Knicks team do not defend the three at all. They've been getting burned
all year long.
And yeah. I don't know what it is. I don't know if they're tired. I don't know what the situation is.
Not closing out, falling asleep, leaving a guy like Malik Beasley, a dangerous shooter, with any space to knock it down.
Yep. And I tell you one thing is, Knicks keep messing around, they're going to be sitting home, brother. They're going to be with the Lakers.
Thanks for the call, man. I don't mean to laugh. He made me laugh. That was such an evil laugh. They're going to be sitting home with the Lakers. Joey is in Palisades Park on the Fan. What's up, Joey?
Hey, what's up, man? Great show. Great show.
Thanks for calling in.
So, you know, what I'm worried about is that Tom Thibodeau, the second half, not only is he not going to make any adjustments, but he's going to burn out the starting five. Because all year, for some reason, the bench has not been developed. And I'm trying to understand why Precious Achiuwa hasn't been seen this series.
Doesn't believe in him. Doesn't have a spot for him. Doesn't want him out there. DMP has not entered.
Is he that bad?
No, it's not that he's not bad. It's just he probably doesn't trust him and doesn't see a role for him. They have played the same eight guys.
Understandably so. You know, Detroit is still, Isaiah Stewart is not even playing.
Right. Probably be worse.
Jalen Duren is pretty much their only big man. I mean, Reed, you know, he comes off the bench, but he's pretty much their only big man. I mean, I'm just not understanding. I mean, you're right. You're absolutely right about what you said. The first two quarters, they just flip-flopped. The Knicks showed up first quarter. Second quarter, they disappear. So does that mean they're going to show up the third quarter and disappear the fourth quarter?
History tells us that they never show up in the third quarter and haven't shown up in the third quarter. They're probably going to let this lead get larger and then turn it on in the fourth quarter with Brunson and Cat. I don't think that's a recipe for success.
As a diehard Knicks fan, man, I don't know if I can do this anymore. I can't. I'm going to catch a heart attack.
Thanks for the call, Joey. Just breathe. Think positive thoughts. Woosah. No heart attacks. It's just sports. And they're not facing elimination. Even if they do continue to fold in the third quarter like we've seen, they're coming back home to the Garden, but it just sucks because it's like, yo, the energy that you came out with in the first quarter evaporated. That's why I was saying good start. They're looking how you want to look, but you can't win in the first quarter. First half summary, they're even, 22 out of 44 field goals, both teams. That's why I said it's like they flip-flopped. They each played their own quarter. Let's see, they're... Rebounds. They're even. 20 rebounds. Free throw percentage. The Knicks hit all their free throws, 10 for 10. The Pistons did not, 9 for 12. I said I wanted to look at the turnovers. 6 turnovers for the Knicks, 5. They're pretty much even. The Knicks have 11 points off turnovers compared to their 4. Points in the paint, they're pretty much even. This game was pretty much even. Like, I'm telling you, the Knicks won the first quarter. The Pistons won the second quarter. Looking at this box score, it's just like, how did it flip like that? 8 fouls to 7 fouls. Knicks 8, Pistons 7. Assists. The Detroit Pistons moved the ball a little bit better. They have 6 assists to 10. And you know who they're throwing the ball to? Malik Beasley, sitting there ready to fire, ready to shoot. Let's go to Mark in California on the Fan in New York. Hello, Mark.
Keith, what's going on? So listen, I love Brunson. I love Towns. They play no defense, bro. I mean, literally, Luka Doncic plays better defense than Jalen Brunson.
Coming off this last series? Coming off of what Luka just didn't do in the last series?
Bro, not just that. Go back to the last 3 series he played in Dallas. He played no defense. Like, none. But what's crazy about it is my wife was watching the game with me, 37-23, and I'm sitting there like, they're going to come back. She's like, what are you talking about? Like, what? Like, you have no faith in your team? I'm like, no, I don't. I've seen this story 10,000 times. It's like I could recite Step Brothers off the top of my head. This is the movie. Like, I've seen this. Knicks never put a team away. Never. It does not happen.
Even Game 6 last year versus Indiana, they're up, and you have Buddy Hield hit 9,000 threes, and you lose the game. Like, it's so relevant. And as a Knicks fan, I don't wish for anybody to be fired. But Tibbs needs to go, bro. Like, 37-23, and you put Campaign and Deuce in for 4 minutes. You're up 15 points, and you put them in. It makes no sense.
And yeah, and that's where they lost the 15-point lead.
Exactly. And where's Landry Shamet? I'd rather have him in there than Deuce McBride. Oh,
like, Landry Shamet is not going to help.
Bro, check it out. Deuce is a smaller Mikal Bridges. He just gets an inbound pass and looks both ways and just shoots a three and misses. And sometimes he'll make one, and sometimes he'll miss, just like Mikal Bridges. Like, if Bridges wants to do more work, he needs to go inside. He has a decent inside shot, and that's it, bro. No more threes. I'm getting tired of it. Like, where was Towns in that series? Like, I think Mitchell Robinson played 4 minutes, 2 minutes, maybe? Like, not even. It's just, dude. And listen, Tibbs is going to kill this team because his lineup switches are like Aaron Boone in the ninth inning. Like, just every single day is a different lineup with the Yanks. You have
no
idea
what's
going to happen.
He plays them all year. They're conditioned. They're ready to go, Mark. This is what they condition all regular season playing all those minutes for. Dave, we'll get to you in a second, but Josh in the Bronx before the Knicks tip off in the second half, what do you got to say?
I'm telling you, Keith, man. They should have won that game at the Garden, man, because you know and I know it's awesome, baby, but I'm telling you, man, if it fades at the end, man, you know, RIP, rest in peace, what can I tell you? If they go back to the Garden, you know, if you can't kill the beast, man, it's like the Aaron Rodgers song, it never's gonna end, man. You can take it from there, Keith, man. Thank
you. Shout out to Josh. And the game is underway. Josh Hart, I think, makes a quick bucket there to tie it up 61-61 as we start the second half. 888-808-1019. We'll get back to the baseball conversation, talking about Juan Soto, the generational Juan Soto, homering twice for the first time as a Met and hitting his first Citi Field homer. He looked like I've seen him look so many times in the past. And Dave is in Farmingville, Long Island on the Fan. What's up, Dave?
Hey, Keith, how you doing, sir?
Good. A lot going on with the Knicks and our baseball teams, and a long show tonight to talk about all of it.
Yeah, man. I'll tell you what. Although my dad was like the MVP of his high school basketball team, I'm a 5'10 white guy, so I'm not a basketball fan.
You didn't inherit the hoop gene from your dad? You didn't have it?
No, man. I can shoot, but once the dribbling's going on,
no handle.
Real quick. I'm a dad of four kids. You know, my son is the oldest. Got three daughters. I coach travel baseball, and I've seen some things. And this is Juan Soto stuff. I've seen some things where we poached like a kid from like out of town, and you know, he was a slugger, you know, the kid that grew up too early. And I've seen like we brought him onto the team, and all of a sudden the kid like fell apart. And I don't want to get into the conspiracy of Juan Soto coming over to the Mets with the expectations, but I can psychologically kind of see the comfortability that he might not have right away. Now, we're 20% into the season. We got 80% of the season to go, the regular season. I think with the proper, you know, nowadays with every sports psychologist and everyone, he's gonna do it. I think everybody should just relax. And we saw today, you know, one-run dings. Yeah, it wasn't in the perfect spot, but it's there. We know it's there. It's there with the pedigree. It's there with everything else. Like, why does everyone have to talk about it other than the fact that I'm talking to you about it?
It's just that because the Mets were playing so well, we needed a pain point. We needed something to complain about. And this is the highest paid player on the team, his first year on the team, right? These are supposed to be Soto's Mets. And of course, because your counterparts, the Yankee fans, are like, yo, look what you got. You paid him all this money. He ain't the same. Look what you got. This guy doesn't want to be a Met. He's not having fun. He just took the money and now he's a zero. Thanks for the call, Dave. Even though he's not a zero, he was getting on base. And, you know, Yankee fans are going to needle Mets fans about his defense or his lack of production. But like Dave said, you just saw it. You saw it today, a two-homer game. It just didn't turn into a win for the Mets. It'll happen. It's a long season. It's May 1st. We got a long way to go. 888-808-1019. When we come back, we'll hear from Juan Soto. We'll hear from Carlos Mendoza. We'll play some cuts from the Mets post game after they were defeated by the Arizona Diamondbacks. Keith McPherson on the Fan. Don't go anywhere. BRB.